Flying the last Pitcairn PA-18 autogyro to Oshkosh. What's it like? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. You might have strolled by the orange Pitcairn PA-18 autogyro, parked among the other antique aircraft at Air Venture, and thought it was a static display or a replica, but it was neither. You were looking at the only remaining airworthy example of an ancestor of the helicopter, and it spent time in the air at Whitman Field. Aero TV captured a few minutes with the guys who brought her, and today we'll hear the audio. Andrew King is a fixed-wing kind of guy and had to get a whole new rating to fly the Pitcairn. He also discovered the reason the rotorcraft world abandoned vestigial wings and ailerons and went instead to direct cyclic control of the rotor blades for bank.
It's pretty bizarre. It's a bizarre feeling. The first time especially, it was really bizarre. I told everybody it felt like you're being swept off the ground by a giant pterodactyl. There's a lot of scary flapping stuff happening over your head. But now that I've gotten used to it, it's more like kind of being in your own cartoon, like Dick Tracy or something, and cruising around in your autogyro. It's easy to fly, but you have to be very careful. So if you ever start thinking, gee, this is easy, you might be starting to get yourself in trouble. And in the air, everything above 5 feet is pretty easy, but the landings and takeoffs you have to be careful because it's wind critical. And because it uses ailerons for bank instead of controlling the rotor, the ailerons don't work at landing and takeoff speeds. And so you have to be very careful to not have any drift when you touch down, and you really can't have any crosswind, because if you have any drift, it's pretty top heavy. And if you hit going sideways, it could tip over. There's a lot of pictures of them back in the old days tipped over with the rotor blades all bent up, and obviously we're trying to avoid that. We think we need a finer pitch prop. It's not climbing as well as it should, but it cruises about 70 miles an hour, and I think maybe we can get a little bit more cruise out of it, too, if we get a better prop on it. The ailerons at cruise speed work great. It's amazing for how little they do at landing speed, that at cruise speed they really work well, and it's a really pretty well-coordinated airplane at cruise speed. It can do vertical descents if you pull the power back, or even if you leave full throttle and just keep pulling the stick back, eventually it just starts going straight down. And you can't stall it, you can't spin it, which was the whole safety concept of the airplane. So that's kind of a different experience for somebody that's been mostly a fixed-wing pilot. And it comes down final approach pretty steep, and it has a pretty short landing roll if you do it right. So, I mean, it can stop pretty easily in probably 50 feet. The requirements for flying the autogyro, legally you had to have the rating, the rotorcraft gyroplane rating. So I had to go fly a modern gyrocopter to get the rotorcraft gyroplane rating. And that I went down for about 10 days and flew about 30 hours, and then I had to go back a month later and take a check ride. I flew with a guy named Dauphin Fritz down in Alabama in an RAF 2000, and so that got the rating out of the way, and then I was legal as far as the FAA was concerned. But to practically fly the autogyro, of course, there's a lot of different techniques and things. It's really much more like a regular fixed-wing airplane or an antique fixed-wing airplane than like the modern gyrocopters. So we had a lot of literature from the era with some of the factory pilots describing how the procedure should be done. Also talked to Steve Pitcairn, who was the last person to fly a fixed-wing, fixed-rotor autogyro, the one that's in the EA Museum now, Miss Champion. And I knew him for many years and talked to him quite a bit about it. And I also talked to Johnny Miller, who flew this airplane in 1935. And he was 101 and actually had a pretty good memory for the old days. And he actually gave me some good hints about flying autogyros.
When we return, lead restorer Jack Tiffany talks about what it took to bring back this bird from a basket case. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack. As tricky as flying a Pitcairn PA-18 might be, it's a walk in the park compared to what it took to restore the machine you saw at Oshkosh. Jack Tiffany led the effort at Leading Edge Restorations.
First of all, it's a 1932 Pitcairn P-18 out of Jarrow. They made 18 of them. This is the only one left. It's the sole ship that is left. So it is the only flying out of Jarrow in the country and in Europe that has wings on it. The old ones had wings. The new ones have no wings and articulating blades. So this is really a prehistoric monster in flight. It has wings. And it has fixed rotors. In other words, the blades do not articulate. And it is fixed on the shaft, the vertical shaft. That doesn't move either. So that makes it extremely rare and extremely difficult to fly. Everything from the upper longeron up was gone. It had been stolen and destroyed. And finding all the pieces and parts from the longerons up was a real treasure hunt. We knew that four aircraft had been crashed prior to losing all the rest. We just hunted for pieces and parts all over the country and Canada. There's a million questions that they ask. I've never seen one in my life, or I saw one when I was a little kid, or is it really real? Things like that. And of course, how does everything work? We get that continually. Bringing any aircraft to Oshkosh is the pinnacle, but bringing this particular aircraft is a dream come true.
The autogyro disappeared into the aviation history equivalent of the La Brea tar pits when the helicopter came along with its ability to hover and its development costs aided by defense contracts. So today, there's something really odd about seeing a rotorcraft pass overhead with the rotor turning at only 120 RPM and feeling no rotor downwash below it. One note for the sake of accuracy, the term gyrocopter is a brand name invented by the Benson Aircraft Company in the 1950s. The machines being made and flown today are correctly called gyroplanes. But in all fairness, Andrew King's not the only one who still uses the term gyrocopter. FAA controllers do it too. See the stately sight of the Pitcairn PA-18 flying at Oshkosh at aero-tv.net in features dated August 17th and 24th. You can find out more about modern gyroplanes in an FAQ provided by the Popular Rotorcraft Association at www.pra.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.